Chemicals in our food, in our water, in our soap, shampoo, toothpaste, and more. Many of these chemicals, including pesticides used on food crops, have been shown to be harmful to our health. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. Pesticides are routinely used on food crops. The U.S. Department of Agriculture sets levels for the use of pesticides that they consider safe. At the same time, multiple scientific studies have come up with different conclusions. Is anyone looking at all the different pesticides residues we eat in a day, and what their combined effect is on our bodies? I don't know the answer to that, but let me introduce you to the Environmental Working Group, or EWG. They see their mission as empowering people with research and information on many of the chemicals we encounter daily. The EWG is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization with several areas of interest, including farming and agriculture, personal care and household products, toxic chemicals, water, and food. The EWG gets much of its funding from organic food companies, and yes, it does favor organic foods. In this program, my guest is Dr. Alexa Friedman, a senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. I asked her to describe what the EWG does.
We focus on research and advocacy for environmental and health protection. At EWG, we're a mix of scientists, policy experts, lawyers, and communicators, data experts, all whose main focus is really on educating consumers with actual information regarding consumer products, the food they eat, and different things in the environment. We hope to inspire the demand for safer products and work to reform our nation's broken chemical safety and agricultural laws.
And how long has the EWG been around?
EWG started in 1993, so we just recently celebrated 30 years. So I'm a senior scientist in our Healthy Living team and Environmental Working Group, one of the two science teams of the organization. And before I joined EWG, I completed a postdoctoral fellowship at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. When I was there, I was focusing on conducting research that looked at the association between consumer product chemicals and adverse reproductive outcomes. And before that fellowship, I completed my doctoral studies at Boston University School of Public Health, where I looked at the association between multiple metal exposure in drinking water and from industrial sources and children's neurodevelopment. And I bring my background in chemical exposures in children and reproductive health to EWG, where I now focus on a variety of things, including chemical exposures from diet, from consumer products, and drinking water.
I'd like to start by getting into the issue of pesticide use on fruits and vegetables. But first, can you give us the definition of the word pesticide?
So the suffix side means to kill or destroy. So pesticides, by definition, are chemicals that are intended to kill, repel, or control forms of any animal or plant life that would damage or be a nuisance to growing. Pesticide is a broad term, and there's many different types of pesticides or chemicals. So under the umbrella of pesticides, we have things that are called herbicides. Herbicides are designed to control weeds and other unwanted vegetation, and they're more commonly used on things like lawns, for example. Under pesticides, we also have insecticides. So these are intended to kill or control insects, commonly used in agriculture, industry, sometimes houses. And then also within pesticides are fungicides. And fungicides, probably you can guess from the name here, but they control fungi and they can be used on plants or other surfaces where mold or mildew might be a concern. And they're also commonly used on crops.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan. I'm here today with Alexa Friedman. She's a senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. And we're talking about pesticides in food crops. Do we know how many pesticides there are that are used on food crops?
In the United States, there are at least 800 pesticides that have been registered for use, some of which, when used in large quantities, may pose risks for our health. And I know we'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's a couple of data sources available to the public that we've used at EWG to take a look at this question. And one of those is called the Pesticide Data Program, which is a sampling or collection of produce that's done by the Agricultural Department, the USDA. USDA, yes. And, you know, each year when they do their sampling, there's a range of how many pesticides have been detected on produce, sometimes, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500. So it's definitely in the hundreds range, but I think it's sort of a guess, but it could be up to 800 different pesticides.
And so you're saying it may be that it just like one food crop has more than one pesticide on it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, different types of fruits and vegetables or produce can definitely have upwards of in the hundreds of different pesticides used. It could be a mix of what's available to the people growing it at the time, or what that crop demands based on its geographical location, or the year, or what the needs are, or just simply the type of crop that's been growing. So some crops, we talked about the different types of pesticides, right? Some right. crops might need fungicides, where some other crops might, maybe they don't need as much fungicides based on the way that they grow, but they might use something more as an insecticide because they're a crop that, you know, insects are really interested in, for example.
Are we likely to know the names of some of these chemicals?
Yeah, you know, some of these might be more common than others. Some names might like ring a bell, like glyphosate, which was the pesticide in Roundup. So I know that that's been, at least on my end, I've seen it in a couple of commercials. But maybe people that are also following just general pesticide news may have really recently heard about a pesticide called Dacyl. This was a pesticide that the EPA just recently, in the last couple of weeks, put out an emergency order on to immediately suspend the use of it because it's so toxic. And this Dacyl had been banned in the European Union since 2009. And even as far back as 1995, almost, you know, 30 years ago at this point, the EPA had classified this pesticide as a possible carcinogen. So I think some of these pesticides have common names that people might have heard of just from the news or just, you know, different sources. But even as someone that I work with pesticide data very regularly, I think it's hard to keep track of all of the different names. I think that's one of the, you know, parts of EWG and what we do, why we do what we do, is to put out resources to consumers so they can have more easy access to information about pesticide exposure, including just what are the pesticides that I should be looking for, or what should I know about them.
Do you know the overall amount of pesticides that are used on produce in the U.S.?
And there's a couple of estimates out there that say in the United States that there's approximately about 1 billion pounds of pesticides sprayed each year, and approximately about 5 to 6 billion pounds used worldwide. So I would say that, you know, we are in the billions of pounds just generally. And in the U.S., the produce you buy could be grown locally, you know, domestically in the United States, or imported. So I think it would be hard to get an exact number of how much overall pesticides are used on produce each year, because there might be varying amounts based on where that produce is grown.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Sawa Khan here with Alexa Friedman of the Environmental Working Group. She's a senior scientist there. So how much in the U.S., how much of the produce that we see in the stores can we sort of say contain these pesticides?
At EWG, every year, we put out a report called The Shopper's Guide for Pesticides in Produce. And in that report, we analyze data from the Pesticide Data Program. So if you were listening earlier, you may have heard me sort of hint at this. And the PDP, that Pesticide Data Program, is run by the USDA, where they collect samples of produce across the United States. And they analyze the detection of pesticides. So what we took a look at is what is the percent of non-organic produce that had detectable levels of pesticides. And in the most recent Shopper's Guide, the one that we put out this year in 2024, we found that 75% of produce had some detectable levels of pesticides. But as we kind of talked about, the percentage of the produce with these detectable levels can vary based on the type of produce. So on our list, which we call the Dirty Dozen, which maybe we'll get into in a little bit, this is the list of the most highly contaminated produce on all of the produce that we look at in the Shopper's Guide. And we found that 95% of the items on that list had detectable levels of pesticides.
What is a detectable level? Is that something of concern?
Yeah, so a detectable level is a way of saying that the tools that they have to measure pesticides were able to pick up a signal of pesticides. So in other words, the way that they analyze all the data, they're looking for, you know, their tools, let's say, can only look at something if it's at a certain level, just based on how specific and how good the estimates are from these different analytical tools. So anytime that there is an actual pesticide signal, meaning that there is some sort of pesticide on the produce, we call that a detected pesticide sample. So there was, the tool was able to pick up the fact that there is some pesticide residue on that produce. So here we're just talking about how often were pesticides found. We're not talking about, in at least in these percentages, what those concentrations were and if those concentrations were worrisome. For the actual shopper's guide, we do a ranking system where we incorporate multiple metrics. One of those metrics is concentration. So when we're ranking our produce, that is taken into account if you do look at our lists or look at the Dirty Dozen or the Clean 15. But, you know, we're not just exposed to one pesticide at a time. So if on these fruits and vegetables, there could be more than one pesticide like we've talked about, and you're eating multiple pieces of produce, hopefully, if you're eating a diet that's high in fruits and vegetables. So we also need to think about the sort of mixtures of pesticides we're exposed to, and just generally the mixtures of chemicals we're exposed to, not just pesticides in diet, but pesticides from other things or different chemicals exposures just from, you know, daily life from consumer products or the water we drink or the air we breathe. So, you know, when we say, you know, is a detectable level of pesticides worrisome, you know, it could be, just because of the, like, just the range and the commonality of being exposed to these things.
Why do farmers use these chemicals on our food crops?
Pesticides have been widely used in producing food to control pests and weeds and bacteria and fungus for a long time. And they can be important to the ability to grow produce at the demand that we need it to feed folks in the United States. And there, you know, are times where there might be safer alternatives than the pesticides that they're using. But both conventional, so non-organic, and organic farmers do use pesticides, but the pesticides that they use can vary just in the way that they've been developed and sort of their concerns for toxicities. So pesticides are important for growing. However, you know, there are times where, you know, EWG and other organizations are saying that there are safer alternatives to the pesticides that we're using. So for pesticides are allowed in organic production, and most of these pesticides are made from natural material, but there are also several approved synthetic pesticides, so made from non-natural materials, that are available for organic use under particular circumstances as well.
The American agrochemical industry spends millions of dollars each year on our congressional senators and representatives to keep the regulation of pesticides extremely limited. And pesticides are a $14 billion industry in the U.S. It's in the monetary interest of agricultural chemical companies to have farmers use large amounts of insecticides, herbicides, and fungicides. It's farmers who are directly exposed to these chemicals when they use them, generally by spraying or dusting them onto plants. It is the farmers and their families who may experience the direct health effects.
There is a huge concern for the occupational exposures too for pesticide spraying, and how those pesticides impact us, whether, you know, you're inhaling it because you're spraying it, or it's getting on your skin because you're using them, or you're ingesting them via produce, can have impacts on our body. So because these pesticides, by design, are toxic, right? They're intended to kill insects, animals, weeds, fungus. They can have similar effects on our body. So a lot of these pesticides that are registered in the U.S. or that are commonly used are what we call endocrine disruptors, which means that they can disrupt the way that hormones function in our body. And anything that's an endocrine disruptor and impacts hormones can just have a larger, wide range of effects. So they can have impacts on our nervous system, which can present as things as changes to neurological function or neurological diseases, such as Parkinson's disease later in life. But they can also have impacts on just the developing nervous system. So for children that are exposed early in life, or people that are or prenatal or postnatal, even early life exposure can have impacts on children's neurodevelopment. And that might present as you know, a change in behavior, mood, or even cognition.
And then there's also evidence that links pesticides to particular diseases. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's a couple of studies, actually a handful of studies that have looked at things, different health outcomes, such as fertility, even certain cancers, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. So the evidence that links pesticides to disease, it depends on the class of pesticides you're looking at and the certain health effects. But for example, there's a handful of ones that have been linked to cancer, endocrine disruptors, neurological impacts, like we talked about Parkinson's, developmental delays, and changes to fertility, even just decreased sperm count in men. There was a large study that just came out recently that looked at that. And there's also been a handful of studies that look at whether or not changing your diet can help reduce your pesticide exposure. So there's a handful of studies that looked at whether or not switching from an organic diet from a conventional diet would help reduce your pesticide exposure. And in a 2022 study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they conducted a randomized control trial. So that's sort of the gold standard in scientific studies. And they found that compared to consuming a diet of only conventional produce versus an organic diet for 2 weeks, had the people in those studies that switched to organic had reduced exposure to several groups of pesticides, including organophosphates and pyrethroids and quimiquat, which are some of the studies we've talked about at depth at UG that have some evidence of toxicity.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Alexa Friedman. She's a senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. Are there certain items of conventionally grown produce that have less pesticide residue?
There are some produce, conventional produce that is, that have fewer pesticide residues, such as the items that are on our Clean 15 list. So these are items that have, that we've looked at the pesticide residue in unconventional produce and seen that on average they have low pesticide detectable levels of pesticides. So things like avocado and sweet corn had both less than 2% of detectable pesticides, which makes them some of the cleanest fruits and veggies on our shopper's guide list. But as we talked about earlier, on average, we saw that 75% of the produce that was looked at in this pesticide data program did have detectable levels of pesticides on conventional produce, which is one reason that we suggest, when possible and when feasible, and if it's an option for you and your family, switching to organic instead of conventional, or shopping items that are on the Clean 15. So those are produce, again, that have fewer levels of detectable pesticides.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen list.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. So the Shopper's Guide to Pesticides and Produce, we take, is an analysis where we look at several measures of pesticide contamination. We look at the percent of samples tested that have detectable levels of pesticides. We also look at the number of samples that have two or more different pesticides that were found. We look at the average number of pesticides on a single sample of produce and the average number of pesticides found there in parts per million. So we look at the concentration. We look at the maximum number of pesticides on a single sample and then the total number of pesticides on a single crop. And what the 30 dozen is out of all of the different produce items in the analysis, the dirty dozen are the top 12 highest ranked on all of those metrics. So those are the 12 fruits and veggies that have the highest level of pesticide contamination.
And can you tell us some of what's on that list?
So on the Dirty Dozen, we have things like strawberries, as well as spinach, collard greens, grapes, peaches, pears, nectarines, apples, bell and hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, and green beans.
So these are all obviously foods that we're encouraged to eat because they're healthy, especially the, you know, things like the greens. So that's a real problem. Does this list change from year to year? Are there certain items that are always on the list or almost always on the list?
Yeah, so the list has changed, but it's also worth noting that the produce that we are looking at, the data that we're looking at rather, that comes from that pesticide data program, not all of the produce are tested every year. So for example, strawberries are not tested every single year and for their pesticide contamination. So what we have seen is that when produce does get retested, you know, after a couple of years, that it may shift from being on a list to a different list or being somewhere in the middle. You know, for example, blueberries ended up on our Dirty Dozen recently because they were retested in the 2020-2021 samples. But before that, they had not been tested since 2014. So blueberries were an item that weren't on the Dirty Dozen for a little while and then recently joined that Dirty Dozen list. So we do see things move around a bit, but because the PDP is not testing every type of fruit or vegetable that we're looking at every year, things don't shift around too drastically from year to year.
The PDP is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Pesticide Data Program, which lists pesticide residue on produce. Alexa, do we know why certain produce items are more heavily sprayed with pesticides than others?
Yeah, it could be due to the way that they are grown or specific challenges with that crop. You know, for example, some crops are naturally more vulnerable to pests or fungi or certain diseases, which might require the need to apply more pesticides to protect the yield. For example, strawberries and leafy greens like spinach are prone to fungal growth, which makes them more likely to have heavier pesticide use, which may explain why they're high up on our Dirty Dozen list. And we took a deep dive this year into what types of pesticides were contaminating the fruits and vegetables on the Shopper's Guide Dirty Dozen list. And we did see that a lot of those pesticides were fungicides. So that could be one reason that certain items have more pesticides, just basically the way that they're grown and the challenges with that crop. But there might be other things, just as how delicate the crop is itself, where it's grown geographically, or the growing season, or the demand for a certain crop at a given time.
So tell us about the Clean 15.
Yeah, the Clean 15 are among all the fruits and vegetables we look at the Shopper's Guide. Those are the 15 fruits and vegetables that rank the lowest across all those different pesticide metrics that we talked about earlier and are the least contaminated with pesticides. So I think I've mentioned already things that we see on the Clean 15 are things like avocado, sweet corn, pineapple, onions, sweet peas, kiwi, cabbage. So there are a lot of great options on the Clean 15 list if you're looking to buy conventional produce, but also are hoping to minimize pesticide exposure. So the Clean 15 is a list where people can say, if they want to shop conventional, maybe you'll choose those items from those lists for those options and then choose organic for items on the Dirty Dozen. But regardless of where your fruits and vegetables sort of fall on this list, it's important to consume those things. Fruits and vegetables are really important for the diet, and we always encourage increasing your fruit and veggie intake when possible.
So yeah, so fruits and vegetables should be a major part of our diets. What do we do about avoiding the pesticide?
Yeah, so people should definitely continue to eat fruits and vegetables whenever possible. They're important to a healthy diet and they're delicious. But if people are interested in reducing their pesticide exposure from produce, they can shop organic when possible, especially for the produce on the Dirty Dozen. Alternatively, folks can opt for conventional or organic produce on the Clean 15. And, you know, shopping organic isn't always an accessible option for folks. We recognize that. There are also really good options in the frozen aisle. So organic frozen fruits and veggies is another option. Sometimes those can be slightly more accessible. But in general, I think that the main recommendation we have is that continue to eat your fruits and vegetables, make them a major part of your diet. But we just want to give folks some resources and options that if they want to reduce their pesticide exposure, you know, some things that they can do that.
I've heard that, you know, some people recommend that you wash the produce, you know, either with plain water or with soap and water. Is that something that will remove some of the residue?
So, interestingly, the produce that we look at for the Shopper's Guide, and that's collected as part of that pesticide data program, it is tested for pesticide residue after it's been washed and after it's been, you know, for example, peeled or however it would be consumed. So, for example, blueberries will be rinsed and then tested, and bananas will be rinsed and peeled. So washing produce will likely not completely remove pesticide exposure. However, you should definitely continue to wash your produce under running water, which may reduce some pesticide residue, but also reduce the risk of contracting foodborne illnesses.
Now, pesticides are also used on other food crops, including wheat, oats, rice, beans. These are all foods we should be eating, I guess, often. How do we avoid pesticides on those foods?
And a similar sort of recommendation applies to these foods as well. So organic versions of these options may also be one way to reduce pesticide exposure.
Sometimes it's hard to find, and it may be expensive too, right? So it may not be something that everyone has access to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's, you know, why at EWG, we don't stop here with the resources for educating consumers about what has been found in their food, but we push for stronger regulations and safer alternatives and changes for pesticides when we can.
You mentioned earlier frozen varieties, like organic frozen. Does that mean the frozen vegetables that are conventionally grown also have pesticides? I assume they do, right?
So yeah, the data that we look at, they do test variations of frozen and fresh produce. So for example, like I know that the SI data program has tested frozen blueberries, which are on our Dirty Dozen list. And so similarly, the fresh and frozen, you can apply that same thought process with them. So if you're looking for frozen options, you can shop for either organic frozen options for the items on the Dirty Dozen, or look for frozen options of the Clean 15 if you want to shop conventional as well.
We've talked about ways we can avoid some of these chemicals in our food. But is there anything the average person could do to change the agricultural and food processing system so that we can eat fruits and vegetables and foods that don't have pesticides?
It's a great question. So for folks that are interested in avoiding pesticides or concerning chemicals in their food, we always try to encourage and put forth resources so that people can actively carefully read labels and look for the ingredients that they're familiar with, shop organic when possible. But in terms of sort of, you know, changing the landscape of the agricultural and food processing systems, I think it's a big challenge for anyone to take on alone, which is partially why, you know, organizations like EWG are trying to lead the charge and push forward regulations or encourage, you know, changes and shapes to these different just systems that we have in the United States.
Does the EWG do any lobbying of Congress or anything like that?
Yeah, so at EWG, we have a team of folks on our government affairs team that do a lot of awesome work pushing forward and doing some lobbying for different bills, particularly around food chemicals. They've been doing some work on food dyes, which I would be happy to send over, but also things like consumer products and different agricultural changes as well.
Fruits and vegetables are widely recognized as being essential to a healthy diet. The EWG recommends buying organic produce and foods, but the fact is many people cannot afford to pay premium prices for organics. In addition, organic options may not be available in many places. In that case, using the EWG's shopper's guides to produce, what they call the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15, may be a useful alternative. Thanks to our guest, Dr. Alexa Friedman, who's a senior scientist with the Environmental Working Group. And thanks so much to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan, signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.